So friends, as I mentioned yesterday, in order to really understand what death is and the process of death, we have to understand what life is. I mean, from the deeper point of view. As we mentioned, there's the external life, which most people are, you know, it's about mostly what they know or what they're doing with their life, their history, their past, their history, their present hopes, all the memories they had since they were a child, various things that you do. So that's the external life. And then there's the internal life. And actually, in the Dhamma, almost in all the various things you read about the Dhamma, there's the external sort of appearance or explanation, and the internal phenomenon. And of course, observing the internal phenomenon is not so easy. And that's why we have to observe our external body, and our movements, and what we're doing, and get focused on that, in that, and gradually can tune into what we call the inner world. So there's the outer world and the inner world. And with the body and the mind, there are basically two main aspects of our mind or life, and that is the aspect of doing, the active side of life, doing, and all the various things that we do. But underneath all that doing, there's a deeper dimension, what we could call being, or just pure being. But most of us don't know anything about really, let's say, pure being, or being in the present moment. Because we're caught up in so much doing. And they call us human beings, isn't it? Right? Human beings. But probably a better term would be human doings. Because we're always doing. You know, like one of these little toy, wind-up toys. You know, you wind up the spring and it goes. As long as the Duracell battery, is strong. But most of us haven't really experienced being. And even in sleep, the mind goes on doing, dreaming, with the body tossing and turning in the sleep. So very rarely does one experience being. And within this active side of life, there's also the mental and the physical. There's basically two parallel streams going on all the time. There's the physical activities of the body, the physical life, the breathing, heart beating, all the cells in the body, and changing. And you're hearing sounds. Sounds are coming through the ears, smells coming through the nose, flavors through the tongue, visual impacts through the eyes, people touching the skin. And that's a constant stream. Because our senses are open for business basically 24/7. Although when we sleep, they're kind of shut down internally because the mind goes unconscious. But during our waking life, there's a continual barrage, unceasing stream of information and sense stimulation coming through the body. And if it's not coming through the eyes, ears, nose, and the tongue, or from the outside, there's the internal process of the body going on, as I already mentioned. And that process started with conception, and it will end largely the time of death. But at the same time, there's the world of the mind flowing on. As I mentioned yesterday, often these things are doing different things. So the body can be doing certain things, like you can be sitting here meditating or trying to, but the mind is lost in a mental world, in the past or future. You don't even know your body's sitting here, but yet it's still sitting, and it's still breathing, and it's still pumping blood, but your mind is nowhere in the body. So these are like two worlds. You could say two separate worlds, although they're deeply interconnected, and they shouldn't be separated, but as I mentioned, because of our attention in the external world, we've lost that natural an inherent oneness or connection with the body. Now, of course, in some ways that's necessary, and you can't just always be connected really to the body. But people take that to extreme, and they are hardly never connected to the body. So the streams of the physical and the mental, which are constantly going through through the nervous system. And of course they interact, because whatever you hear, the mind goes into its memory, recognizes that, remembers it, and then emotions get triggered off, such as desire, aversion, fear, and then you take action based on them. And that process can happen, in a finger snap. But it's happening mostly on the unconscious level. We're not really aware of it, only kind of vaguely we're kind of aware of it. But that process is occurring very quickly. And the Buddha called this, the body and mind basically is the Buddha described it as the five aggregates. The five aggregates is is a very important theme, aspect of the Buddha's teaching. Because in the very first of the Four Noble Truths, the first noble truth of dukkha, or suffering, you know, the Buddha states that, you know, sickness, old age, death, then sorrow, lamentation, pain, grief, and despair are suffering. And that's bound up with attachment to the body. And then getting what you don't want and not getting what you want, or usually it's stated, not getting what you want and getting what you don't want is also suffering. But then he said, in short, you know, or in summation, the five aggregates of clinging are this dukkha. And the five aggregates are the elements of our body and mind. So I wanted to go over that a little bit more detail, because that's also precisely what Vipassana meditation is aimed at doing, is tuning in to this, these five aggregates as they are arising and passing away moment by moment, because that is the real process of life as it's occurring moment by moment. And not understanding that process, clinging to these aggregates as being I, me, and mine, is what gets us all bound up in the law of karma, and cause and effect, in our various actions. So, the five aggregates of clinging, basically, in, you know, they're the material form, which includes this physical body, but also all the material elements of you know, the world. And it's earth, you know, all these material elements. Anything that can be heard, sound is a material vibration. Visible object, color is a material vibration. Odor, flavor. These are what are called the aggregate or collection of forms. They're called a collection because ever since we were a baby and got, you know, shoved outside, we came in contact with all these forms, you know, and all these new smells and sights and sensations. And you know, you can see in the young baby, you know, as soon as he, you know, after some time, he can start crawling. He's crawling around everything, trying to grab everything. You have to protect it because, you know, it just grab, you know, grab the cat's tail, cat turn around, scratch it, and then get, you know, a fear, develop a fear of cats, or any number of things. And so, based on all these material vibrations coming through, so that's the material stream, basically. We call them the elements. In the Buddhist teaching, you often hear about the four elements of earth, fire, water, and air. But these elements are not like chemistry type of elements. Actually, they're just the vibrations of the vibrations of energy, basically. Because even this body, you know, we see this physical body, you know, from the outside, it looks solid. But actually inside, when you dissect it, you know, the body is just made up of billions of cells. Cells are made up of billions of molecules. Molecules are made up of billions of atoms. Atoms are made up of billions of electrons. So like that, you know, electrons. So basically it's just energy, condensed energy. And even modern quantum physics now is also, you know, telling that, or has been. But the Buddha knew that long ago. So the four elements, basically, it's what we feel: hardness, fluidity, temperature, and motion. This is really what, you know, comprises the body in its ultimate breakdown. But anyway, all these other material elements, material vibrations, I prefer to call them vibrations, like the vibration of hearing, vibration, sound vibration, visible vibration, odor vibration, taste vibration, tactile vibration. And each of these, you know, they go through our nervous system. Sound touches your ear and it travels through the nervous system to the brain, where it's recognized. Or what comes next is it's felt. Everything that touches the body, it produces a feeling. And this is what is called the aggregate of feelings. That means the painful, pleasant, and neutral feelings produced by these sensations. It's the way the mind remembers the vibration. And this, in Pali the word is vedana. And for those who are interested, the material vibrations, they're classified as rupa, or physical form, or matter. And then there's the mind that has four phases of the mind: feeling, perception, volition, and consciousness. And all together, those four aggregates of the mind, I mean, that's what we call a mind. When we say mind in the Buddhist teaching, it refers to feeling, perception, volition, and consciousness. It's a process. It's not, a mind isn't kind of just some little thing, you know, inside your brain or somewhere. Like, you know, up in a cloud, right? Cloud computing, all your stuff goes up in a cloud. But it's a process. So the feelings, we've learned about learned these feelings when we were, you know, born. Again, the example of a child. So the child feels its mother's body. It feels very warm, and you know. Then he gets milk, and it produces a pleasant feeling mostly. That, you know, the connection with the mother's body. So, you know, or taking the milk, and so that produces a pleasant feeling in them. But then something else happens, or you know, he grabs the cat's tail and it's scratching. You know, painful feeling arises. Then it starts to remember these things. When it sees the mother's body, it has desire for the mother's body because it's has this pleasant feeling because the mother treats the baby very, you know, lovingly and very nicely. And maybe some other relative picks up the baby and maybe they're more kind of gross, and maybe, you know, the baby starts crying. There's something not strange. So anyway, from the time we are born, everything we've come into contact with, depending on our experience, it produces either a pleasant feeling, a painful feeling, or a neutral feeling. A neutral feeling, basically, we don't react to them very much. They kind of come and go in the background and we hardly even notice them. But it's the painful ones and the pleasant ones that we develop attachment to. And attachment to the pleasant feelings and aversion to the painful feelings. And this is remembered by the mind. And this feeling is connected to a perception. So the perception is the third of the aggregates. In Pali it's called Sanya. And it's really one of the most important aspects of the mind in terms of creating the world. So Sanya is the mental picture or idea created out of the material vibration. You know, just I know this may sound a little bit theoretical, or, but it's very important to understand. Let's say you hear a sound. Okay, let's say your eyes are closed. Right, your eyes are closed, and you hear different sounds. And as you hear those sounds, your mind is recognizing them, saying, "Oh, that's the teacher talking. That's the amplifier noise. That's somebody coughing. That's a car coming up the driveway." You know, and these are just sort of popping out, these labels. You know, the labels or even images are popping out of the mind. That is the perception. And so it creates, the mind creates a mental image or idea of what was essentially just an empty vibration. It's the sound vibration passing through the nervous system, but it's picked up as being something pleasant or painful, and then you recognize it. And that becomes a habit. And the mind then starts recognizing every time it experiences the same kind of object. It goes into its memory just like a computer does, and matches up that particular vibration, and then identifies it as, you know, a bird or a dog or a human, or even a visible object, you know, a certain, you know, a man, a woman, all the various objects. And even when you look up here, you see this form in a certain shape, and it's striking your eye, the retina of the eye, but it's just color in a certain shape. But because of the focus on it, then your past experience, you recognize, oh, that's a monk. Because, you know, maybe there's no hair, wearing this color kind of robe. And also the perception makes it stand out from everything else. If it wasn't for perception, this shape would blend into everything else. But the eye sort of creates 3D. And it's through the process of perception that, because of the attachment and identification, the mind pulls those particular colors or sounds out, and then it stands out as being separate from the other things, and you recognize it. So that's a function of perception. And that happens automatically in the mind. That's the way the brain and mind and brain of evolve. And of course, that's necessary. But we cling to these perceptions, you know, we get attached to them. And we cling to them either as, this is a pleasant object and I want it, or it's a painful object and I want to get away from it. Because again, the feeling and the perception are intimately connected. And again, this comes from your experience. Even from past lives, it could have, many of them have come. But in this life itself, we also have plenty. And everything that you like or dislike. So everybody's got different likes or dislikes, right? People have certain things they like to see, which produce pleasant feeling, like the, you know, beautiful forms and so on, according to, you know, relative society condition. Or ugly forms, like seeing a dead body on the ground. Usually, oh, it's unpleasant. Why is it unpleasant? Because it reminds you of your own mortality. Or it has a bad odor. And so everything we've experienced through the eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, and mind, the mind has classified it as something that's pleasant and I want it, or it's unpleasant and I want to get away from it. And this happens basically automatically, and it's also happening on an unconscious, mostly an unconscious level. For example, you're meditating, then you get an itch or these pains. So you're sitting there just, you know, trying to feel the breath, breathing in, breathing out. Then all of a sudden, you know, there's a feeling in the body that you say, that's a painful feeling. So a painful feeling arises. The mind, you know, painful feeling usually makes the mind kind of recoil. And then we identify this sensation, you locate it, it's in my knee. Because of memory, your mind knows the knee has certain type of sensations, so when it identify one, it can locate it and say, that's a pain in the knee. So first the idea of a knee is created in the mind, and then the knee has to belong to a body, right? You don't see knees sitting around by themselves, right? So then this knee belongs to a body, and this body belongs to me. See, all of that is created in the mind in an instantaneous nanosecond through the brain process, through this process of feeling and perception. Because the body is just a mass of vibrations. And that's how, you know, when you're sitting, you can feel your feet. Because your feet have a certain kind of sensation, and it's different from the sensation of your nose or your hand. So the mind is sitting there feeling all these different sensations, and it's identifying, this is my feet, this is my hand, this is my head, this is my eyes. This is my arm. But that's, the mind identifies these things through the feeling and the perception. And then we cling to them as being myself. That's what's sort of the crux of the matter. That's the sort of the decisive, pivotal point. There's nothing wrong with a knee or a body. But when you cling to it as being mine, I, me, or mine, then you struggle with whatever happens to it. And then the suffering arises because you're identifying it as being mine. And so the self, the ego, the I, you know, it's always wanting happiness. It's always seeking comfort. So when a painful feeling arises, it sees that as the enemy. You know, this is happening to me. Otherwise, in the experience of meditation, once you develop a high degree of mindfulness, and concentration, which I'm sure most of you have experienced at some time in your various retreats through the mental training, you know, you can actually just feel the body just sitting there. You can see feel the sensations, but you know there'll be a disconnect of these sensations are, you know, belong to me. And you can train the mind to see the body objectively. That's why in the meditation practice, we have you, you know, be aware of, you know, breathing in, sitting, breathing out, sitting. But you leave off the idea that I am breathing out. Simply breathing in and breathing out. Not I am breathing in, I am breathing out, or I am sitting. It's simply, there is this phenomenon occurring. There's breathing in, there's breathing out. There's sitting. There's a painful feeling arising. There's a pleasant feeling arising. There's a sound coming through the ear. But you leave off the idea that I am hearing this. I am feeling that. That is the training in Vipassana. To depersonalize the five aggregates. More about that later. And coming back to these five aggregates again, so we've talked about material vibrations that are always coming through the senses, producing these feelings. And because of our past experience, and they produce the perception. Then once you've identified the object, then what are you going to do about it? Once you felt a painful feeling and identified, you know, that painful feeling as myself, now you have to do something. So the next aggregate is volition. That means it's the reaction to the feeling and the perception. And usually for a painful feeling, the reaction will be trying to struggle to get away from it. And this will produce thoughts in the mind, of course, which include desire. So the accumulated types of desire and craving in the mind will arise. Or the aversion, or the anger, the whole gamut of emotions. So this next aggregate is called the sankhara, sankhara khanda, the collection of reactions. So if the painful feeling is there and you can't bear it, then you move. You lift your knee or adjust your leg to try to relieve the pain. So that's a sankhara, that means a habit reaction. Or to lift your hand up to scratch something, because the itch is normally a painful feeling, so you try to remove it. And that's a sankhara, a habit formation, a volition. And that is actually where karma is created, is our reactions to either get what we want or to get away from what we don't want. And basically what we call life, for the average, the Buddha has a nice term, says the uninstructed worldling. You know, the uninstructed worldling who's uninstructed in the Dhamma, doesn't know anything about the Dhamma. Doesn't know anything above just eat, drink, and be merry, and greed, hatred, and delusion. Anyway, so the mind is caught in a perpetual tug of war between wanting to capture pleasant feeling and to get away from painful feeling. And therefore the objects that those feelings are connected with. And so any object that produces a painful feeling, we say, I don't like that. Any objects that produce pleasant feelings, I want that. So the mind is constantly going back and forth between searching for or trying to hold on to the pleasant feelings and rejecting or having fear of getting in contact with the painful feelings. And really, this is, you know, for anybody who's not fully enlightened, this is the process. The mind is caught in this process. Because the mind is always seeking pleasurable feeling. I mean, there's some people that, sadistics or whatever, you know, seek painful feeling, but normally the mind is seeking pleasurable feeling. And if it doesn't have one, it goes, it, you know, tries to seek one, create one. And because we have many painful feelings, the mind, to escape painful feeling, the mind tries to create or capture pleasant feeling. But these feelings are impermanent. We can't control them. Feelings are produced by contact. And they're beyond our control. As I said, the eyes, ears, nose, tongue, and the body are open for business all the time. So we're just sitting here innocently, but all kinds of sounds barrage our ear. You know, unpleasant ones. Maybe some pleasant ones. But when you meditate, almost every sound you consider to be the enemy. Oh, that's disturbing me. Why are they coughing? They're moving. Teacher, stop talking. You know, we can see that going on in our mind. So, you know, the more that you identify painful feelings, the more craving you will have for pleasant feelings. In order to get away from the painful feeling, you go out of your way to try to seek and create the pleasant feeling. And once you get the pleasant feeling, you cling to it and you want to hold it. And when something threatens that pleasant feeling, you get angry. Because it's threatening the ego. It's the ego that wants these feelings. It's the I that wants these feelings. You know, feelings are food. One of the aharas. One of the foods of the mind, feeling. And even aversion is a kind of craving. So in the Buddhist teaching you hear, you know, the Four Noble Truths. Second Noble Truth says that craving is the cause of suffering. So craving means craving for these pleasurable feelings, but also aversion to the painful feelings. There's positive craving, that means we want the pleasant feelings, and there's, you could say, negative craving, to get away from the painful feelings. The craving or desire to get away from the painful feelings. But, you know, these feelings are changing very fast. But it's because we're untrained, we've allowed our mind to get caught in this tug of war between the feelings. And the mind gets bewildered because it can't hold the pleasant feelings very long or the objects that those feelings represent. And it can't control the painful feelings that come to us. So what's to be done? We find ourselves in a dilemma. Well, that's where the wisdom of the Buddha and the practice of meditation plays probably its most primary functional role in, of course, eliminating suffering. Because we have to live. As long as we have this body, it has a certain lifespan. You know, we have to live. So we should at least try to live in a way that brings or happiness. But people don't understand what happiness is. And so in the name of happiness, they're pursuing these impermanent pleasurable feelings that get them caught up in unskillful living. So you, if you don't have the means and you don't have the money to get pleasurable feelings, then you might steal, you might lie, you might do other unskillful types of speech. You might kill, pillage, rape, plunder, intoxicate the mind, do all kinds of unskillful karmic actions. But then we have to reap the results of that as pain and suffering. And in the same way, to get away from painful feelings, we'll do the same thing, like break all the precepts. And that's why the observance of precepts for, within the Buddhist tradition and for meditators, he took the, five precepts, the eight precepts. These are ways of training our mind not to get caught up in all these type of unskillful actions that bring painful results. So, basically the process of life for somebody who has not freed themselves from greed, hatred, and delusion is simply this process of the five aggregates arising and vanishing moment by moment. We didn't mention the last one. The fifth aggregate is the consciousness. So we have the material forms, then the feeling that the forms trigger in the mind, and then the recognition and the world-creating aspect of the perception, and then the reaction either to get the pleasurable feeling or get away from the painful feeling. Some action you do either with the body or even with the mind. And then there's the consciousness. The consciousness is basically it's the ego. It's a sense of I. But in reality, consciousness is just a light. Consciousness is the natural phenomenon of just the presence. It's really the present moment, or the light of awareness. Because without consciousness, you'd basically be dead, unconscious. But the easiest way is that consciousness is basically this this feeling of aliveness, or the light that allows you to hear, see, smell, taste, touch, and even to recognize thoughts in your mind. But that consciousness, we also cling to that as being mine. And we say, I am conscious. But consciousness can work without you. But because of ignorance, this sense of consciousness, we've appropriated it by identifying with it. Then now I am the one that's hearing, seeing, tasting, smelling, touching, or feeling. And the illusion of I am doing this gets cemented in the mind. Because we haven't been trained. A newborn baby, when a baby first, comes out of the womb, and the mother holds it, it doesn't have any sense of I at that point. You know, it's brand new, right? It's just come out into the world. The Big Bang. And all these things are coming through it, but there's still no sense of I in the young baby's mind like that. And even the feeling of its body is sort of like fused with the mother's body. It doesn't even have an idea that this is my body or anything. There's just awareness, what we call oceanic kind of awareness. But then what happens? What happens? Your mother's. You give it a name. Little Susie. Little Johnny. And you start holding it. Oh, Susie, Johnny, Johnny. And the relatives come over and start, you know, tickling the stomach. Then little by little, over weeks and months, you know, by the time it gets 6 months, it's like what used to be oceanic awareness, a little nucleus, somehow, there must be an eye in here, you know. It's getting all kind of attention. And so a nucleus starts sort of coalescing, coagulating out of all these various sensations. Somehow the mind is creating a little nucleus of an I that then is a part of the conscious, becomes, arises with the consciousness. And every time you hear, see, taste, smell, touch, or think, the sense of I, which is just another thought in the mind, attaches itself like a parasite. You know, a parasite, right? They ride along for free, you know, sucking the blood of the animal. Or even you. Your parasites inside your stomach and body. So the sense of I, because of this ignorance and conditioning, it arises with the mind. And that's what we cling to. So we cling to the consciousness as being I, me, or mine. And it becomes fixed there until the moment you die, but it even continues after that as well, in some cases. So, you know, that's why they're called aggregates of clinging. Because we're clinging and identifying them as I, me, or mine. But this is created in the mind through ignorance and through conditioning. That's why there's a very beautiful story in the Buddha's teaching about finding the origin and the end of the world. There was somebody, you know, a deva who was trying to find the end of the world. And he went, the devas are kind of celestial beings, and with one stride of the foot, they can like cover 100 miles. So this deva was like walking really fast and running all over the universe, trying to find the end of the world. He was going to this sage and that sage and spiritual teacher, and they kept on saying, "Well, you better go to that one, go to him." You know? And somebody said, "Go up to God in that Brahma world. Ask him." So he ran up there and he said, "You know, where's the end of the world? Brahma was supposed to be one who created the world. So you think he'd know?" And Brahma looks around, makes sure none of his disciples are watching. He says, "Go ask the Buddha." So this Rohatisa comes back and goes, "Ask the Buddha." The Buddha, you know, "Where I've been traveling physically trying to find the end of the world." And that's when the Buddha made his famous statement. He said, "Dear Rohatisa," kind of probably chuckling under his breath, "my dear Rohatisa, you're not going to find the end of the world by physically traveling." And that's when he made this utterance of that the world, the arising of the world and the ceasing of the world is right within this 5 or 6 foot long body with its nervous system, feelings, perceptions, and consciousness, memory and consciousness. And that's this, you know, this five aggregate process, especially with the perception. It identifies various amorphous energy vibrations, because sound is just an energy vibration. It goes through the ear. Color is an energy vibration that strikes the eye. Odor is an energy vibration. Flavor is an energy vibration. Press the skin, sends a tactical vibration. And even recognizing a thought. A certain thought or memory arises in your mind. You know, somebody who insulted you. Oh, and then again, you identify, that's me. He insulted me. And then anger and you know, suffering arises. But that is being created in the mind. And that's very important for understanding, because you know that is the creation of life. This, you know, the inner life. The modern scientists, you know, they want to discover the Big Bang, right? They want the origin of the universe. They're all, you know, hyped up and trying to, you know, propose some theory about how the universe started, the Big Bang. You know, sending missiles out to some asteroids and trying to blow them apart to see, you know, if they have the same kind of elements and all this stuff. Or they're sending probes out beyond the solar system, trying to find the end of the universe. So they're only interested in the material world, where the Buddha was interested in the mental world. What creates the world-creating process within our mind, but especially in terms of suffering and happiness. So, you know, the Big Bang in terms of the mind was, it occurs from ignorance. And the mind creating its false illusions about what the world is, about what this body is, and then allowing the mind to get all caught up into, involved in the karmic web, the intricate karmic web of desire and aversion. That, you know, lasts until a person breathes their last and dies. And that process continues, you know, even and because the mind is clinging to that. And even when you die, people are still clinging to these memories, clinging to their sense of self. And that was what's going to generate the, you know, what happens next. I'll be talking more about that later, the details of the death process and some other aspects of karma. But really, that is what we call life. And that process of the five aggregates arising and vanishing, each moment of hearing, seeing, tasting, smelling, touching, and thinking, with a moment of contact, they all kind of arise simultaneously, feeling, perception, volition, and the consciousness, and they vanish. As soon as that sound vanishes, all that vanishes and something else arises. And so sound here is heard, and, you know, oh, there's somebody, but then another sound over here, and the mind leaves that one and recognizes that one, and then you feel some pain on the body, and the mind leaves that sound and goes, reacts to that one. And so whatever the strongest of the sensory stimulations coming through our senses at any point in time, that's where the mind creates its world. And you feel a pain in the body, the mind creates its world. Oh, this body, I have this body, this pain, and you know, all kinds of worries arise with it. Or you hear a sound or a memory pops in the mind, and then the mind creates a mental world of desire or aversion of some object that came into the mind. And because of the clinging, the mind goes on perpetuating these little mental worlds. And so actually the world arises and ceases in each moment. And it can change so quickly. And, you know, so that's really the process of conditioned life. And so if we don't understand what that is, what our conditioned life is, then we won't really understand and be able to sort of train ourselves for the reality of when this mind leaves the body. Because it's a very strong, the energy of craving, or in Buddhist terminology, they usually say greed, hatred, and delusion. These are the three strong, you know, creating energies of the world, especially in terms of illusion and the cause of suffering. And it's simply because we've never been taught, you know. And in this Western world that prides itself on science and technology, they're still stuck in the caveman days. You know, they should get with it, you know. You know, the Buddha got with it 2,500 years ago, went beyond this material world. Why are so people so obsessed with the material world? There's a whole world that they don't understand and know in the mind, which is 100 and 100,000 times more blissful, kind of pleasant types of sensations and experiences beyond what we know in just this sort of material world. But again, only meditation really provides the key for unlocking that. So even the idea of your body dying, that is basically an illusion that is created in the mind. The sense that even I am dying is a kind of is an illusion, because ultimately the I is just a mental bubble. It has no inherent concrete reality. So in the meditation process, you know, we're trying to, you know, by observing the body objectively, you know, just sitting, breathing, hearing, and tuning in to this moment-to-moment stimulus that is coming through the senses, and to observe these, you know, reactions of identifying, reacting to the, getting stuck on the painful feelings, and attachment to the pleasant ones, and especially how the mind is dragging in the past and future according to those perceptions, and then causing the mind to really spin out in so many stories and melodramas, which is just, you know, it's just an empty process. I mean, where is it? You can't even put it in your hand. All these thoughts that are going through the mind, they're just basically nothing. Just energy vibrations, but yet we cling to them so strongly, and then we suffer accordingly. So even the notion that I am dying, this body is dying, that is also part of an illusion. And that is part of the training in meditation, is to train ourselves to, when it does happen to us, we can not cling so strongly to this idea, and with fear and anxiety and so on, so that we can, you know, be able to let go of all that. Okay, so I think that may be enough for this talk. So I just wanted, you know, to kind of try to explain, you know, the process of life. And that's what we're trying to understand, first of all, to try to tune into that and feel that as it's going through us moment by moment, by cultivating mindfulness concentration, and that's an aspect of wisdom. Even intellectually understanding this idea about the aggregates and impermanence, even if it's just intellectually, that's the first step, because it helps you to kind of orient your mind toward what you're feeling. Instead of getting drawn into a feeling, you can just be aware, this painful feeling, painful feeling. It's not I, not me, not mine. And kind of just let it, if you don't pay attention to it, it'll disappear. And you apply the same logic to any other types of distractions, feelings and thoughts that come into the mind. So if you have any questions about any of that, then you can write them down for tonight's questions and answer period. We can explore some of those ideas a little bit more to get some clarity on that.